myself for the next 60 minutes as I, Alan Maxwell, take you on a voyage. A voyage into the pages of the Illuminati. Tonight's episode, He Who Evolved. Friendship was perhaps a little unusual, for Pollard was a number of years older than Dutton and myself, and was different in temperament, being rather quieter by nature. He had followed an intensive course of biological studies, too, instead of the ordinary engineering courses which Dutton and I had taken. Dutton and I drove northward along the Hudson on that afternoon. We found ourselves reviewing what we knew of Pollard's career. We knew that he took his master's and doctor's degree and had heard of his work under Braun, the Vienna biologist whose theories had stirred up such turmoil. We had heard casually, too, that afterwards he had come back to plunge himself in private research at the country house beside the Hudson he had inherited. But since then we had had no word from him, and we had been somewhat surprised to receive his emails inviting us to spend the weekend with him. It was drawing into early summer twilight when Dutton and I reached a small riverside village and were directed to Pollard's place a mile or so beyond. We found it easily enough, a splendid old peg-framed house that for 100-odd years had squatted on a low hill along the river. Its outbuildings were clustered around the big house like the chicks around some protecting hen. Himself came out to greet us.
Why, you guys have grown up. Here I've remembered you as Huey and Max, the campus troublemakers, and you look as though you belong to business clubs and talk everlastingly about sales resistance.
That's the sobering effect of commercial life. It hasn't touched you, you old oyster. You look the same as you did 5 years ago.
He did, too. His lanky figure and slow smile and curiously thoughtful eyes having changed not a bit. Yet Pollard's bearing seemed to show some rather more than unusual excitement, and I commented on it.
If I seem a little excited, it's because this is a great day for me.
Well, you are in luck to get two fine fellows like Dutton and me to trail up to this hermitage of yours, I began, but he shook his head smilingly.
I don't refer to that, Max, though I'm mightily glad you've come. As for my hermitage, as you call it, don't say a word against it. I've been able to do work here I could never have done amid the distractions of a city laboratory. If you two knew what... But there, you'll hear it soon enough. Let's get inside. I suppose you're hungry?
I assured him that sounds great. I could eat half a cow.
Same here. I just pick at my food lately. Give me a few dozen sandwiches and a bucket of coffee and I consider it a full meal.
Let's see what we can do to test your delicate appetite.
We found this big house comfortable enough, with long, low-ceilinged rooms and broad windows looking riverward. After putting our bags in a bedroom, and while his housekeeper and cook prepared dinner, Pollard escorted us on a tour of inspection of the place. We were most interested in his laboratory. There was a small wing he had added to the house of frame construction outside to harmonize with the rest of the building. But inside, offering a gleaming vista of white tiled walls and polished instruments. A big, cube-like structure of transparent metal surmounted by a huge metal cylinder resembling a monster vacuum tube took up the room's center, and he showed us in an adjoining stone-floored room that contained the dynamos and motors of his private power plant. Had fallen by the time we finished dinner, the meal having been prolonged by our reminiscences. The housekeeper and cook had gone, Pollard explaining that the servants did not sleep in the place. We sat smoking for a while in his living room, Dutton looking apprehensively around at our comfortable surroundings.
You're going to say 17 has that. I wouldn't mind if he could last for a while myself.
Easy life. You know about it, you. The fact is, I've never worked so hard in all my life as I've done up here in the past 2 years.
What in the world have you been working at, I ask? Something so unholy that you'd have to keep it hidden away up here.
That's what they think down in the village. They know I'm a biologist and have a laboratory here. So it's a foregone conclusion with them that I'm doing vivisection of a specifically dreadful nature. That's why the servants won't stay here at night. As a matter of fact, if they knew down in the village what I've really been working on, they'd be 10 times as fearful as they are now.
Are you trying to play the mysterious great scientist for our benefit? If you are, you're wasting your time. I know you, stranger, so take off that mask.
That's right, I told him. If you're trying to get our curiosity worked up, then you have.
No. I've no intention of working up your curiosity. As a matter of fact, I asked you here to see what I've been doing, and to help me finish it.
Help you? What can we help you do? Dissect worms? Some weekend I can see right now.
There's more to this than dissecting worms. Do you two have any knowledge at all of evolution?
I know that it's a fighting word in some states, even now, I answered. And that when you say it, you have to have a smile on your face.
I suppose you're aware of the fact that all life on this earth began as simple unicellular protoplasm, and by successive evolutionary mutations or changes, developed into its present form, and is still slowly developing.
You know that much. Just because we're not biologists, you needn't think we're totally ignorant of biology.
Shut up, Dutton, I warned. What's evolution got to do with your work up here, Pollard?
It is my work up here. I'll try to make this clear to you from the start. You know, or say you know, the main steps of evolutionary development. Life began on this earth as simple protoplasm, a jelly-like mass from which developed small protoplasmic organisms. From these developed, in turn, sea creatures, land lizards, mammals by successive mutations. This infinitely slow evolutionary process has reached its highest point so far in the mammal man, and is still going on with the same slowness. This much is certain biological knowledge, but two great questions concerning this process of evolutionary change remain. What is the cause of these slow, steady mutations into higher forms? And what is the future course of man's evolution going to be? What will the forms into which in the future man will evolve? And where will his evolution stop? Those two questions biology has so far been unable to answer. I have found the answer to one of those questions, and I'm going to find the answer to the other tonight.
We stared at him. Are you trying to spoof us?
I'm absolutely absolutely serious, Mac. I have actually solved the first of those problems. I have found the cause of evolution.
What is it, then?
What it has been thought by some biologists for years to be, the cosmic rays.
The cosmic rays? The vibrations from space that Millikan discovered. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, the cosmic rays, the shortest wavelength and most highly penetrating of all vibratory forces. It has been known that they beat unceasingly upon the Earth from outer space, cast forth by huge generators of the stars. It has also been known that they must have some great effect in one way or another upon the life of the Earth. I have proved that they do have such an effect, and that that effect is what we call evolution. For it is the cosmic rays beating upon every living organism on Earth that cause the profound changes in the structure of those organisms which we call mutations. Those changes are slow indeed, but it is due to them that through the ages life has been raised from the first protoplasm to man and is still being raised higher.
Good Lord, you can't be serious on this.
What do you mean?
I mean that I have found in the cosmic rays the cause of evolution, the answer to the first question, and that tonight, by means of them, I'm going to answer the second question and find out what the future evolution development of man will be.
But how could you possibly?
I've been able in the last months to do something no physicist has been able to do, to concentrate the cosmic rays and yet remove them from their harmful properties. You saw the cylinder over the metal cube in my laboratory? That cylinder literally gathers in for an immense distance the cosmic rays that strike this part of the Earth and reflects them down inside the cube. Concentrated cosmic rays, millions of times stronger than the ordinary cosmic rays that strike one spot on Earth, fall upon a man and standing inside the cube, what would be the result? It is the cosmic rays that cause evolutionary change, and you heard me say that they are still changing all life on Earth, still changing man, but so slowly as to be unnoticeable. But what about the man under those terrifically intensified rays? He will be changed millions of times faster than ordinarily, will go forward in hours or minutes through the evolutionary mutations that all mankind will go forward through in eons to come.
And you propose to try this experiment? I cried.
I propose to try it on myself, and to find out for myself the evolutionary changes. The old cry, never an attempt has been made yet to tamper with nature's laws, but that cry has been raised.
But Dutton's right. Pollard, you've worked here alone too long. You've let your mind become warped.
You are trying to tell me that I have become a little mad. No, I am sane, perhaps wonderfully sane in trying this. Can't you two see what this may mean to humanity? As we are to the apes, so must the men of the future be to us. If we could use this method of mine to take all mankind forward through millions of years of evolutionary development at one stride, wouldn't it be sane to do so?
The whole thing is so crazy, I protested, to accelerate the evolution of the human race. It seems somehow forbidden.
It's a thing glorious if it can be done, and I know that it can be done. But first, one must go ahead, must travel on through stage after stage of man's future development, to find out which stage it would be most desirable for all mankind to be transferred. I know that there is such an age.
And you asked us up here to take part in that?
Just that. I mean to enter the cube and let the concentrated rays whirl me forward along the paths of evolution. But I must have someone to turn the rays on and off at the right moment.
It's all incredible. If this is a joke, it's gone far enough for me.
We will go to the laboratory now.
I remember following Pollard and Dutton to the laboratory. My thoughts were spinning so at the time. It was not until we stood before the great cube from which the huge metal cylinder towered that I was aware of the reality of it all. of acids and strange equipment around us, we heard the hum of the motor generators start up. Beside the cube, and as he closed the switch, there came a crackling, and the cylinder glowed with a white light. And the big quartz-like disc in the cubicle chamber's ceiling from which the white force shot downward.
The cylinder is now gathering cosmic rays from an immense area of space. And those concentrated rays are falling through that disc into the cube's interior. To cut off the rays, it is necessary only to open this switch.
He reached to open the switch, and the light died. Quickly, while we stared, he removed his clothing, donning in place of it a loose white running suit.
I will want to observe the changes of my own body as much as possible. Now I will stand inside the cube and you will turn on the rays and let them play upon me for 15 minutes. Roughly, that should represent a period of some 50 million years of future evolutionary change. At the end of 15 minutes, you will turn the rays off and will be able to observe what changes they have caused. We will then resume the process going forward by 15 minutes, or rather a 50 million year period.
But where will it stop? Where will we quit the process?
We'll stop where evolution stops, that is, where the rays no longer affect me. You know, biologists have often wondered what the last or final stages of development of man would be, the last mutation. Well, we are going to see tonight what it will be.
Sealed envelope, which he handed to me.
This is just in case something happens to me of a fatal nature. It contains an assignation signed by myself that you two are in no way responsible for what I am undertaking.
Pollard, give up this unholy business, I cried, clutching his arm. It's not too late, and this whole thing seems just ghastly to me.
I'm afraid it is too late. If I backed out now, I'd be ashamed to look in a mirror hereafter. And no explorer was ever more eager than I am to start down the path of man's future evolution.
He stepped up into the cube, standing directly beneath the disc in the ceiling. He motioned imperatively. I closed the door and then threw the switch. Thank you. force shot down from the disc in the cube ceiling upon Pollard, we glimpsed his whole body writhing as though beneath a terrifically concentrated electrical force. The shaft of glowing emanations almost hid him from our view. I knew that the cosmic rays in themselves were invisible, but guessed that the light of the cylinder and shaft was in some way a transformation of part of the rays into visible light. With beating hearts into the cubicle's chamber, having but fleeting glimpses of Pollard's form. My watch was in one hand, the other hand on the switch. The 15 minutes that followed seemed to me to pass with the slowness of 15 eternities. Neither of us spoke, and the only sounds were the hum of the generators and the crackling of the cylinder. From the far spaces was gathering and concentrating the rays of evolution. At last, the watch's hand marked the quarter hour, and I snapped off the switch. The light in the cylinder and inside the cube dying slowly. Cube, staggering as though still dazed by the impact of the experience. But he was not the Pollard who had entered the chamber. He was transfigured, godlike. His body had literally expanded into a great figure of such physical power and beauty as we had not imagined could exist. He was many inches taller and broader, his skin a clear pink, every limb and muscle molded as though by some master sculptor. The greatest change, though, was not his face. Pollard's homely, good-humored features were gone, replaced by a face whose perfectly cut features of immense intellectual power that shone almost so overpoweringly from the clear dark eyes. It was not Pollard who stood before us, I told myself, but a being as far above us as the most advanced man of today is above the troglodyte. Stepping out of the cube, and his voice reached our ears, clear and bell-like with triumph.
You see, it worked as I knew it would work. I'm 50 million years ahead of the rest of humanity in evolutionary development.
Pollard! Pollard! This is terrible, this change!
Terrible? It's wonderful! Do you two realize what I now am? Can you realize it? This body of mine is the kind of body all men will have in 50 million years. And the brain inside is a brain 50 million years ahead of yours in development. Why, all of this laboratory and former work of mine seems infinitely petty, childish to me. The problems that I worked on for years, I could solve now in minutes. I could do more for mankind now than all men now living could do put together.
Then you're going to stop at this stage? You're not going further with this.
Of course I am. If 50 million years development makes this much change in man, what will 100 million years, 200 million make? I'm going to find that out.
I grasped his hand. Pollard, listen to me. Your experiment has succeeded, has fulfilled your wildest dreams. Now stop. Think what you can accomplish for mankind. And I know your ambition has always been to be one of humanity's great benefactors. By stopping here, you can be the greatest. You can be a living proof to mankind of what your process can make it. And with that proof before it, all humanity will be eager to become the same as you. He freed himself from my grasp.
No, Max. I have gone part of the way into humanity's future, and I am going on.
He stepped back into the chamber while Dutton and I stared helplessly. It seemed half a dream. The laboratory, the cubicle chamber, the godlike figure inside that was and still was not Pollard.
Turn on the rays and let them play for 15 minutes more. It will project me ahead another 50 million years.
His eyes and voice were imperative, and I glanced at my watch and switched on the switch. Again, the cylinder broke into light. Again, the shaft of force shot down into the cube to hide Pollard's splendid figure. Dutton and I waited with feverish intensity in the next minute. Pollard was standing still beneath the broad shaft of force and so was hidden from our eyes. What would its lifting disclose? Would he have changed still more into some giant form? Or would he be the same, having already reached humanity's highest possible development? When I shut off the mechanism at the end of the appointed period, Dutton and I received a shock. For again, Pollard had changed. He was no longer the radiant, physical, perfect figure of the first metamorphosis. His body instead seemed to have grown thin and shriveled, the outlines of bones visible through his translucent flesh. His body, indeed, seemed to have lost half its bulk and many inches of breadth. But these were compensated for by the changes in his head. For the head supported by this weak body was an immense bulging balloon that measured fully 18 inches from brow to back. It was almost entirely hairless, its great mass balanced precariously upon his slender shoulders and neck. And his face, too, was changed greatly, the eyes larger and the mouth smaller, the ears seemingly smaller also. His great bulging forehead dominated his face.
You were surprised to see me this time. Well, you see a man 100 million years ahead of you in development. And I must confess that you two appear to me as two brutish, hairy cavemen would appear to you.
The eyes of the shriveled, huge-headed figure in the cube fired with anger.
Stop at the first age. I'm glad now that I didn't. The man I was 15 minutes ago, 50 million years ago in development, seems now to me to have been only half animal. What was his big animal-like body beside my immense brain?
Pollard, do you realize what you're doing? You're changing out of human semblance.
I realize it perfectly, and I see nothing to be deplored in the fact. It means that in 100 million years, man will be developing in brain capacity, and will care nothing for the development of the body. To you two crude beings, of what is it to me the past seems terrible, but to me it is desirable and natural. Turn on the rays again.
Don't do it. This madness has gone far enough.
If you do not, it will be but the work of a moment for me to annihilate both of you and go on with this alone.
You'd kill us, I said dumbfoundedly. We two of your best friends? His narrow mouth seemed to sneer.
Friends, I have millions of years past such irrational emotions as friendship. The only emotion emotion you awaken me is contempt for your crudity. Turn on the rays!
His eyes blazed as he snapped the last order, and as though propelled by a force outside myself, I closed the switch. Again hid him from our view, and our thoughts during the following quarter hour, I can say nothing, for both Dutton and I were so rigid with awe and horror as to make our minds chaotic. I shall never forget, though, that first moment after the time had passed, and I had again switched off the mechanism. I could not call him that in my own mind, stood in the cube chamber as a shape, the sight of which stunned our minds. He had become simply a great head, a huge hairless head fully a yard in diameter, supported on tiny legs, the arms having dwindled to mere hands that projected just below the head. The eyes were enormous, saucer-like, but the ears were mere pinholes at either side of his head, the nose and mouth being similar holes besides the eyes. He was stepping out of the chamber on his little limbs, and as Dutton and I reeled back in unreasoning horror, his voice came to us, and it held pride.
Tried to keep me from going on. And do you see what I've become? To such as you, no doubt, I seem terrible. Yet you too, and all like you, seem as low to me as the worms that crawl.
Good God, Pollard. You've made yourself into a monster. The words burst from me without thought. His enormous eyes turned on me.
You call me Pollard. And yet, I am no more the Pollard you knew, and who entered the chamber first, than you are the ape of a million years ago, from whom you sprang. And all mankind is like you too. Well, they will all learn the powers of one who is 150 million years in advance of them.
What do you mean?
I mean that with the colossal brain I have, I will master without a struggle this man-forming planet, and make it a huge laboratory in which to pursue the experiments that please me.
But Pollard, remember why you started this experiment in the first place, I cried. To go ahead and chart the path of future evolution for humanity, to benefit humanity and not to rule it. The great head's enormous eyes did not change.
I remember that the creature Pollard was until tonight had such foolish ambitions, yes. It would stir mirth now if I could feel such an emotion. To benefit humanity. Do you men dream of benefiting the animals that you rule over? I would no sooner think of working for the benefit of you humans. Do you two yet realize that I am so far ahead of you in brain power now as you are ahead of primitive beasts? Look at this.
It climbed under the chair beside one of the laboratory tables, reaching among the retorts and apparatus there, swiftly poured several compounds into the lead mortar, added others, poured upon the mixed contents another mixture made as swiftly. There was a puff of intense green smoke from the mortar instantly, and then the great head, I can only call him that, turned the mortar upside down. A lump of shining, mottled metal fell out, and we gasped as we recognized the yellow sheen of pure gold, made in a moment, apparently by a mixture of common compounds.
What is the transformation of elements to a mind like mine? You two cannot even realize the scope of my intelligence. I can destroy all life on this earth from this room if I desire. I can construct a telescope that will allow me to look upon the planets of the furthest galaxies. I can send my mind forth to make contact with other minds without the slightest material connection. And you think it terrible that I should rule your race. I will not rule them. I will own them and this planet as you might own a farm and animals.
You couldn't, I cried. Pollard, if there's anything of Pollard left in you, give up that thought. We'll kill you ourselves before we let you start a monstrous rule of mankind. We had started desperately forward toward the great head, but stopped suddenly in our tracks as the great eyes met ours. I followed myself walking backward to where I had stood. Walking back and Dutton with me, like two automatons.
What do you two would try to kill me? Why, I could direct you without a word to kill yourselves and your two sons and sons. What chance does your human will and brain give mine? What chance will all the forces of men have against me when a glance from me will make them puppets of my will?
Desperate inspiration flashed through my brain. Pollard, wait, I exclaimed. You are going on with the process, with the rays. If you stop here, you'll not know what changes lie beyond your present form. He seemed to consider.
That is true, and though it seems impossible to me that by going on I can attain greater intelligence than I now have, I want to find out for certain.
Then you'll go under the rays for another 15 minutes, I asked quickly.
I will, but lest you harbor any foolish ideas, you may know that even inside this chamber, I will be able to read your thoughts and can kill both of you before you can make a move to harm me.
He stepped up into the chamber again, and as I reached for the switch, Dutton trembling beside me, we glimpsed for a moment the huge head before the downward white force hid it from our sight. Of this period seemed dragging ever more slowly than before. It seemed hours before I reached at last to snap off the rays. The chamber shaking. At first glance, the head inside seemed unchanged, but then we saw that it had changed, and greatly. Instead of being a skin-covered head with at least rudimentary arms and legs, it was now a great gray head-like shape of even greater size, supported by two great muscular tentacles. The surface of this gray head thing was wrinkled and folded, and its only features were two small eyes as small as our own. Inside our minds came a thought from the gray head thing before us, a thought as clear as though spoken.
You have guessed it. for even my former head body is disappearing, all atrophying except the brain. I become a walking, seeing brain. As I am, so all of your race will be in 200 million years, gradually losing more and more of the atrophied bodies and developing more and more of their great brains.
His eyes seem to read us.
You need not fear now the things I threatened in my last stage of development. My mind, grown infinitely greater, would no more want to rule you men and your little planet than you would want to rule an anthill and its inhabitants. My mind, gone 50 million years further ahead in development, can soar out now to vistas of power and knowledge unimagined by me in that last stage and unimaginable to you.
Great God, Pollard, I cried. What have you become? Dutton was laughing hysterically.
I have become what all men will become in time. I have gone this far along the road of man's future evolution, and am going on to the end of that road to attain the development that the last mutation possible will give me. Turn on the ray. I think that I must be approaching now the last possible mutation.
Over the switch again, and the white shaft of the concentrated rays veiled from us the great gray shape. I felt my own mind giving beneath the strain of horror of the last hour, and Dutton was still half hysterical. To my ears as the minutes passed. With every nerve heaved to highest tension, I threw open the switch at last. The rays ceased, and the figure in the chamber was again revealed. Dutton began to laugh shrilly, and then abruptly was sobbing. Know whether I was doing the same, though I have a dim memory of mouthing incoherent claims as my eyes took in the shape in the chamber. It was a great brain, a gray limp mass 4 feet across. It lay in the chamber, its surface rigid and wrinkled by innumerable fine convolutions. It had no features or limbs of any kind in its gray mass. It was simply a huge brain whose only visible sign of life was its slow, twitching movement. From its thoughts beat strongly into our own horror-weighted minds.
See me now, a great brain only, just as all men will be far in the future. Yet, you might have known, I might have known, when I was like you, that this would be the course of human evolution, that the brain that alone gives man dominance would develop, and the body that hampers that brain would atrophy until he would have developed into pure brain, as I now am. I have no features. No senses that I can describe, that I can realize the universe infinitely better than you can with your elementary senses. I am aware of planes of existence you cannot imagine. I can feel myself with pure energy without the need of a cumbersome body. To transform it, and I can move and act, and despite my lack of limbs, by means and with speed and power utterly beyond your comprehension. Now, and as such, though I can no more feel the emotions of love or friendship, neither can I feel those of ambition or pride. The only emotion, if such it is, that remains to me still is intellectual curiosity, and this desire for truth that has burned in man since his apehood will thus be the last of all desires to leave him.
Then all men will someday be as you are now, I cried.
Yes, in 250 million years, man as you know him and as you are will be no more. And after passing all the stages through which I have passed through tonight, the human race will have developed into great frames inhabiting not only your solar system, but entire regions of the universe.
That's the end of man's evolutionary road? That's the highest point that he will reach?
No, I think he will change from this great brain into still a higher form. And I am going on to find out now what that higher form will be. For I think that this will be the last mutation of all, and that with it I will reach the end of man's evolutionary path, the last and highest form to which he can develop. You will turn on the rays now, and in 15 minutes, we will know what that last and highest form is. Turn on the rays.
My hand was on the switch, but Dutton had staggered to me, was clutching my arm.
Don't, Max. We've seen far enough. Let's not see the last.
I can't, I cried. Oh, God, I want to stop. I want to see the end myself. I've got to see.
Turn on the rays.
Came the order from the brain again.
Turn on the rays.
The end of the road. The last mutation, I screamed. We've got to see. We've got to see. And I drove the switch home. Flash down again to hide the great gray brain in the cube. Dutton's eyes were staring fixedly. He was clutching at my side. The minutes passed. Each tick of the watch in my hand was a mighty note of a great tolling bell in my ears. With Dutton to the cube's very edge. The great gray brain that had been inside, it was gone. There lay on the cube's floor, instead of it, a quite shapeless mass of clear, jelly-like matter. It was quite motionless, save for a slight quivering. My shaking hand went forth to touch it, and then it was that I screamed, such a scream as all the tortures of hell's cruelest fiends could not have wrung from a human throat. The mass inside the cube was a mass of simple protoplasm. This, then, was the end of mankind's evolutionary road, the highest form to which time would bring him, the last mutation of all. the road of man's evolution was a circular one, returning to its beginning. From the Earth's bosom had risen the first crude organisms, then sea creatures and land creatures, and mammal, and ape to man. And from man, it would rise in the future through all the forms that we had seen in this evening. There would be supermen, bodiless heads, pure brains, only to be changed by the last mutation of all, into the protoplasm from which first it had sprung. I do not know now exactly what followed. I know that I rushed upon the quivering, quiescent mass, calling Pollard's name madly and shouting things I am glad I cannot remember. I know that Dutton was shouting too, with insane laughter. And that as he struck with lunatic howls and fury about the laboratory, the crash of breaking glass and the hiss of escaping gases was in my ears. And then from those mingling acids, bright flames were leaping and spreading. Sudden fire that alone, I think now, saved my own sanity. For I can remember dragging the insanely laughing Dutton from the room, from the house, into the cold darkness of the night. I remember the chill of the dew-wet grass against my hands and face as the flames from Pollard's house soared higher. And I remember that as I saw Dutton's crazy laughter by that crimson light, I knew that he would laugh thus until he died. My narrative of the end that came to Pollard and Pollard's house. It is, as I said in the beginning, a narrative that I can only tell now, for Dutton has never spoken the same word since. In the institution where he now is, they think his condition the result of shock from the fire, just as Pollard was believed to have perished in that fire. I have never until now told the truth. But I am telling it now that it will in some way lessen the horror that it has left in my mind. For there could be no horror greater than that which we saw in Pollard's house that night. I have brooded upon it. With my mind's eye, I have followed the tremendous cycle of change, that eon-long climb of life from simple protoplasm through myriads of forms of lives in ceaseless pain and struggle, only to end in simple protoplasm again. And I wonder one other thought. Will that cycle of evolutionary change be repeated over and over again upon this and other worlds ceaselessly with no purpose until there's no more universe for it to go on in? Is this colossal cycle of life's changes as inevitable and necessary as the cycle that in space makes of the nebulae myriad suns to become nebulae again? Or is this evolutionary cycle we saw a cycle in appearance only? Is there some change that we cannot understand above and beyond it? I do not know from which of these possibilities is truth, but I do know that the first of them haunts me. It would haunt the world if the world believed my story. Perhaps I should be thankful as I tell this story that I know that mankind would never believe. the voyage of the Illuminati with Alan Maxwell. We'll see you here again next time. United States of America.